The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.
Coming up.
This is Jason Gay coming up on the Free For All. NFL, Yahoo, Europe, Jags, Bills. What were the numbers? What were the real numbers? Joe Flint joins us to tell us the truth. And also Brian Costa from Kansas City in the World Series with Jim Cherusmi talking Mets and Royals. And an exclusive podcast debut for the Free For All. Tech columnist extraordinaire for the Wall Street Journal, Joanna Stern. We talk about everything, and I mean everything. Apple Watch, WSJ Digital, WSJ Readers, and what Joanna will be giving out to the kids at Halloween. That's the Free For All coming up now.
Timely insights, funny stories, sports, culture, life. This is Free For All from the Wall Street Journal. Now, here's Jason Gay.
You know, in addition to the fact that I hate that intro, no disrespect to the handsome voiced man, but when he says funny stories, he says it in such a way that it just doesn't signal anything funny. Like, when I hear funny stories, I don't think I'm going to hear a funny story. I think I'm going to hear a caricature of a funny story. What do you think, Jim?
Well, you know, I was preparing. I have all these notes, and I was preparing for a funny story, but then I look at all my notes, and none of them are funny.
Funny stories. You are listening to the Free For All. I'm Jason Gay. I'm joined, as always, by my better half, Jim Cherusmi.
How you doing, Jason?
Jim is a Mets fan, so he's got the fever right now, and we'll get to that. But first, we had a little bit of NFL history over the weekend. Yahoo! Is it Yahoo or Yahoo? Because it has the exclamation. Jim, they were the first carrier of the first internet-only streaming NFL broadcast from London, Jags versus the Bills. Did you watch any of it?
You know what? I did. You know, and you know, we'll talk about technology later on in the show, but everyone pays a lot of money to, you know, like hype up their TV and everything like that. And then, you know, I was watching the game on my iPad. It took the fun out of it.
You need the kind of pageantry of a big screen television or a, you know, standard television apparatus to enjoy proper NFL football.
No, I'm watching Bills Jaguars, and I immediately have the instinct to turn the channel when the commercial goes on.
Oh,
and,
I get it.
You know, on my iPad, I'm forced to watch commercials.
Yeah. Did you go mobile at all with it?
No, I just watched on my iPad, which is sort of, you know, it's portable.
Yeah.
And I did, actually, I then went to the kitchen to make eggs for breakfast, and I did carry my iPad as I was watching the football game. So that was a first.
What kind of eggs did you make?
Just scrambled. Mm.
Do you do butter?
No butter.
Butter's the secret, buddy.
Is that right?
You got to butter them up, and that's a totally different iteration of scrambled.
The next
get back
London
to me
game.
Next Monday.
Yes.
I want to bring in Joe Flint, reporter for the Wall Street Journal, who has been covering Yahoo's inaugural effort in NFL streaming. And Joe, good morning to you.
Good morning.
First thing, I want to get to the numbers that Yahoo's putting out there and the NFL is putting out there, but I just want to ask you about, did you watch yesterday?
I did watch. I watched also on my MacBook and checked it out on my phone as well. I tried to do it on my TV. I have a smart TV.
Okay.
And I could get the audio, but not the video. But I'm going to put that on me and my own technical ineptness rather than put that on any Yahoo issues. But so mostly was watching a game on the stream that I normally would not really care about at all.
I was struck, yes. Most of us probably would not be ordinarily drawn to a Jags-Bills game in London. But also for Joe. Joe, you're out on the West Coast. Is that right?
I am on the West Coast, so, and I didn't see kickoff, but I was up around 7:15 or so.
Yeah, 6:30 a.m. is a rough start for watching live stream football. But I was struck, by the quality of the streaming. I just thought it was a grade above what I'm used to. I do have the DirecTV Sunday ticket, and it doesn't pop on in the way that this popped on. Jim, was that your experience too?
No, I was fine. I was kind of struck by the lack of marketing of this game, because a couple people asked me, so where can you see this game? And I said, Yahoo. And then they repeated, so where can I see this game? And I said, Yahoo. And then I said, it's on TV in Buffalo and Jacksonville, but nowhere else, and you can see it on Yahoo. And that seemed to confuse some people.
You didn't answer my question. Joe, what do you think of the quality of the streaming?
Well, I too thought it was good. It was sort of funny because a lot of people were ripping it online. And sure, there were initial freezes. There were some freezes and some glitches. And obviously, we're used to a much more, higher quality on television. But for what it was, I thought it was good. And it kind of reminded me of the Louis C.K. bit about the guy who just learns he has Wi-Fi on the plane. And
yeah.
Then cuts down, he freaks out.
Yeah.
I just sort of thought, let's step back a little and, really think about this. We're watching a game live on the internet, and I thought for the most part it was decent enough quality.
I think the Louis C.K. thing is like, you're in a tube that is going to deliver you across the country in 4.5 hours, and you're complaining about the Wi-Fi. Numbers, NFL right out the door this morning saying 15 million, but is that even an accurate reflection of what the actual viewing audience of this thing was?
That is not an actual reflection. Going back to how you opened on how one should say Yahoo,
yeah.
I look at these numbers and I think Yahoo.
Yeah.
The 15 million is what we in the industry commonly refer to as sort of the BS number. It's the number of people who checked it out. The number of people who actually watched the game was more like 2.36 million.
Okay.
And of those, 1.64 million were in the U.S., the rest from overseas.
Wow.
The NFL didn't quite grasp this last night when I was talking to them, because they were acting like the 15 million number was the average number, and how it had been beat ESPN's average audience for Monday Night Football. And I was a little peeved this morning when I found out that their PR apparatus either didn't know or didn't disclose what the actual average audience was.
Well, I don't know if you've been following the NFL, Joe, for long, but they never put out anything that they don't thoroughly believe. So, does anyone look at this? Do other carriers, and more importantly, do sponsors look at that number nevertheless and say, okay, I see the future? We're all in sort of general agreement that television is going this direction faster than we can even anticipate. But do the numbers back up the enthusiasm?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it depends on how you want to look at these numbers, because this morning the NFL was doing a little bit of different spin saying, think about those numbers for two teams with, neither one of them over 500.
We sent you the worst dreck we could possibly send, and you still watched it.
Right. I think, and of course it had no competition at that hour, I think there's a platform here, and could it eventually be a national platform? Of course, but I wonder if the other play for the NFL at some point, and I say this partially as a long-suffering Redskins fan living in Los Angeles, that this could be a way for them to custom tailor packages to people.
Yeah.
Maybe I would just subscribe to, Redskin games, pay $100 or something, and get that, and that could be another incremental revenue stream. I don't know how quickly the NFL wants to roll out a Yahoo package or any sort of internet provider package, but they could carve something out with London games next year, but it'll be interesting to see. I'm not quite sure it's ready for prime time.
I just have two quick questions for you, Joe, before you have to go. One is, the sort of big question I have with regard to streaming and particularly sort of a la carte sports viewing is, it's pretty clear for quite a while now, networks have been overpaying for the value of these products because they want to make sure that they lock in that demographic. They want to make sure that people are paying those carrier fees. And then when you get into the world of a la carte, you're actually, you're going to find it much in the same way we've learned in the newspaper industry. We know exactly how many people are reading an article, clicking an article, even how long they linger upon the article. There's going to be some real truth arriving in terms of what are the actual viewing audiences and more importantly, what is the actual economy for NFL product on TV?
Totally, especially as the distribution platform either change or get more flexible. I mean, if we suddenly were to wake up tomorrow and live in a world where only those who wanted ESPN had it,
yeah,
that would be a much smaller audience.
Yeah.
And, you know, Monday Night Football's audience would go down too, because there's a lot of casual tune into the game that would likely disappear. And, yeah, I mean, at some point, are we heading towards some great correction in sports economics? I keep thinking that, and yet the league keeps somehow
chugging along.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard the
more money for less product to these guys.
The joke gets made every so often, but you know, ESPN's business model isn't necessarily getting people who love ESPN to pay for ESPN. It's getting people who don't watch ESPN to pay for ESPN. That's pretty much the
exactly.
business model.
Right.
Just a last thing. I saw a reference to this last week, and I thought it was fascinating, was the idea of, within streaming, the idea of micropayments, i.e., say you're on social media and someone says, hey, the last 2 minutes of Patriots-Jets is on. It's a really close game, 99 cents, and sort of incentivizing through social, getting people to log. I mean, there's a million different ways to parse this, which is kind of fascinating.
Yeah, no, you never know. I mean, I would have liked to have seen the Jets-Patriots game out here yesterday. We didn't.
Or the second half of your Redskins game.
I know. Yeah, totally. I don't have to sit there waiting for Red Zone to go to it every, 10 minutes.
But would the price go down? Would the price go down depending on what part of the game?
I love that. Yeah, Joe. Before you go, Kirk Cousins, is he your guy?
Oh boy, he's sort of he's may not be Mr. Right. I think right he's still Mr. Right now, but we'll see. But at least he did well enough to get 2 weeks off and then get crushed by the Patriots when he comes back.
Oh boy. All right. Well, thanks very much, Joe. Thanks for getting up early to go on the free-for-all, and we'll talk soon.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, in addition to North American football, Jim, America is wild about baseball because it's World Series week. Game one beginning in Kansas City, Kauffman Stadium, Tuesday night. And joining us from somewhere in the Kansas City Metropolitan Airport region is Journal baseball columnist Brian Costa. Brian, where are you? Sounds windy.
I'm live from the Hertz rental car pickup center at the Kansas City Airport, live reporting here. Right
now, what are you going to go for? Are you going for the midsize? Do you have any preference there?
It's like a Toyota sedan.
A Camry or a Corolla?
It is a Camry.
Now, do you do the walk around, Brian, on your own, or you just kind of like, get in the car and drive it away?
I just go.
Okay. So. What about the fuel service option?
Got to do that.
Yeah. Now, I also want to talk to you about the World Series, which is beginning on Tuesday night. Casey, you were here last year, or you were there last year for those games. Incredible atmosphere in Kansas City for the Royals. Are you surprised to see them back?
I am, only because there's such a sort of random element to the postseason in October. So, even if a team is good 2 years in a row, you just don't expect to be in the same place for the start of the World Series 2 years in a row, especially when that place is Kansas City.
Yeah.
So, Brian, last year you mentioned during our live blog that Royals fans are dedicated to their signage. So you've been to many ballparks across the nation. Royal fans, where do they rank in terms of signage and cleverness of signs?
remind me what inane comment I made on the live blog.
The signs that they bring to the game.
Brian, you don't have a photographic memory of every single live blog comment you made during the 2014 World Series? Jim, also
a lot of comments to keep that thing coming. I'm not even sure what I said.
In fairness to Brian, also there was the Hunter Pence thing last year, remember? That was a whole thing. Everyone made the, Hunter Pence loves Adam Sandler movies, all that stuff.
The only thing I remember about our live blog last year was Jason going out and trying the what was the blue?
There's a blue margarita. Yeah, there's some sort of blue margarita that I think shaves
it. Smurf margarita. That's what
you
called it, right?
Yeah. Okay, Brian, do you want to hear my ignorant World Series analysis? Which is that.
I do.
All right, here it is. For those who do not believe in analytics of any kind, this is my take. This is my fresh take on the World Series. The Mets pitching is just, it's been lights out. I know the delay. People worry about it, but I think these guys are locked in. They're too young to really get freaked out by it. And the Royals haven't really seen them, and at least they haven't seen them rolling at this kind of level. And, you know, you pass through that rotation once. That's all you need to win a series. I think the Mets could take care of business early. Am I crazy?
No. In fact, I wouldn't surprise me at all. The way I look at it is this way. I was going to pick the Royals in six, but only because in doing so, I fully expect the Mets to win in five. Does that make sense? Because I've picked against the Mets in every series now, and I've been wrong. And so now I fully expect to be wrong, but I still have to kind of go with it and say, sure, the Royals will win it.
Jim is going to five. Are you going to five, Jim?
I am. I'm a little worried about this series because there's two factors.
You say that as if there's a series to follow, Jim. You're like, I'm a little worried about this World Series.
Well, because
I don't know if we can get through them.
You know, the Royals, they're playing, you know, on house money. They were six outs away from elimination in the first round.
Yeah.
In game four, they came back and won. And I think cold weather is a factor. I think the Mets pitching in cold weather, I mean, you can't do anything in the weather they had during that Cubs series. And the Cubs bats were just frozen. Now, with the weather a little warmer, that plays to Kansas City's advantage.
It's a little weird. The other thing that could... I don't know what impact this would have, but tomorrow night, there's a lot of rain in the forecast here for Kansas City.
Yeah.
So I think that's something that everyone's keeping an eye on right now to see how that would affect things. I know it probably wouldn't mix up the pitching too much because baseball hates in a playoff game to have to start and stop. They don't want to have that kind of impact. If they thought it was going to rain later, they just wouldn't start the game. Even if they were wrong, they'd rather do that than have to, like, suspend the game. Or even have to knock the starting.
Would they start a game at 10 p.m. Eastern?
Yeah, I think they'd rather start late than have to kill the off day and play in it, you know, play a game on the off day. But I think they would start late before they say, okay, well, we can play for an hour from 8 to 9, but then we're probably going to have to, you know, the rain is going to come. I don't think they want to do that.
Brian, I know you got to get into your mid-sized economy and drive off, but just a last question for you. You are in Kansas City, which, of course, is one of the great barbecue capitals of the universe. Have you done barbecue lunch and barbecue dinner, and how do you feel after it?
I have, and I can finally say that after a year, my body feels right again. it's taken some time. A lot of veggies, a lot of time in the gym, but I feel somewhat healthy again. So here's to spoiling that probably tomorrow or Wednesday.
All right, fantastic.
It's tough. There's not, you know, the barbecue is great here, but you've got to use the ballpark. You know, you only have so many options. So.
All right. Well, okay, Brian, have a great trip to Kansas City. Remember, don't drive backwards over those tire spikes when you're leaving the Hertz lot. Okay.
Thanks, Jason.
All right. That's Brian Costa, journal columnist, baseball savant, joining us from Kansas City. We're going to be right back after this with journal superstar Joanna Stern.
They're here. All new podcasts from the Wall Street Journal, including
Your Money Matters, all week long, Heard on the Street.
I'm Alex Frangos.
Hi, I'm Miriam Gottfried with Heard on the Street. Be sure to tune in to our podcast where we talk about financial issues,
the latest on global investing,
the Chinese economy,
stocks and bonds,
the biotech industry,
companies and the latest things going on
all over the world.
Your Money Matters from the Wall Street Journal. Ambition comes with earbuds. Now, timely insights. Funny stories, sports, culture, life. This is Free for All from the Wall Street Journal. Here's Jason Gay.
Jim, here's a counter theory. Maybe that's not even a human. That's like an algorithm of like a radio voice that they've created specifically for my show at great expense, in which case I like it.
And tailored to our podcast audience.
Exactly. They much in the same way that Pandora has learned taste. They've quickly learned the taste for free-for-all listeners. I am so excited, Jim, about our next guest. You have no idea. A fanboy is a real overused term, but I'm a fanboy for Joanna Stern, tech columnist extraordinaire for the Wall Street Journal. Joanna, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me here.
Well, I've wanted to have you on the show ever since we began this 3 long weeks ago. So thank you for being here, but I want
It's very hard for me to get here.
Yes, well, your people, they talked to my people and we made it happen.
I had to walk 5 steps from my desk.
I'm very, very happy to have you here. I want to ask you.
Send a car service.
We have a rascal. We can actually just bring a rascal around. Okay, I have a lot of questions for you. First of all, you are a tech columnist at the Journal, but in addition to writing this spectacular column, you're a video maestro, mm-hmm. and you work with the Journal video team. Is there someone you work with someone specifically most of the time?
Yes. His name is Drew Evans.
Drew Evans. And
you should really have him here.
Drew is, how would you put it? Is he sort of the auteur here, or are you the...
Well, we have a really interesting working dynamic.
Okay.
Basically, every week, I write down some crazy thoughts on paper,
okay.
and then he makes them happen. I do a lot of cracking of the whip.
Yeah.
But he really does it.
So you're like the executive producer, and he's kind of the auteur?
Yeah.
Maybe like that?
Yeah.
And here's the thing, Jim. I'm going to flatter her for a second, which is that you work in a very crowded field. Okay, much in the same way with sports. There are 50,000 lunatics who every morning... Look, she's looking at her. She got a
My Apple Watch says I need to go.
Ignore that Apple Watch. You work in a very crowded field, a lot of competition, a lot of people looking at the same kinds of things you're looking at. And yet, both you and Jeffrey Fowler, who is incredible too, who is the other tech columnist of the Journal, you find a way to make it totally different. Your stuff looks like nobody else's stuff.
Thanks.
Is
Are
that
there
the
bosses
idea?
Listening to this podcast?
You know what?
Do you have data on who listens to your podcast? Is it the people that work?
We have 100% penetration in the C-suite of News Corporation. You have no idea.
I became a fan because of Helmet Cam.
I
don't like Helmet Cam in sports. I don't think it works. But I think Helmet Cam in technology is a new frontier.
That is my one little bit of sports knowledge. We used a hockey helmet.
That's right.
Rigged up with some sort of... His dad's a doctor, so it has some sort of like surgical metal on it. And then a huge DSLR straps to the front of that thing.
We see the end product, which are these really great POV videos. But what is it actually like to watch? There's one where you go into a restaurant, mm-hmm. you know, and what is the scene around you as they're looking at you walking in with this?
You can really do anything you want if you have a big hockey helmet and a camera on. People don't stop you. You just can do whatever you'd like.
It's like New York. People are like, that's just another crazy person.
It's pretty much.
Right?
Pretty much, yeah. There was the one where I actually held up emoji signs in Times Square and around, and people just thought it was normal. Tourists were taking photos. I mean, this is just it's a day.
What kind of viewer or audience feedback do you get? What do you hear from readers? What do you hear from viewers?
Well, depends on the topic.
What's a hot topic that people want to bicker with you about?
So in tech, it's very similar to sports. This is one major sort of overlap I think there is between tech journalism and sports journalism.
Right.
You have fans.
Okay.
Do you know something about
super
this?
Fans. Sure. We've heard of
fans
this.
Fans for teams.
Yes.
In tech, those teams are not actually players, but they are companies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So like an Apple fanboy, so to speak.
Apple fanboys. What is the craziest sports team fanatics?
Well, right now it's the Mets in the World Series, yeah.
The Mets are
Apple. They're worse.
The Mets could not have less in common with anything than Apple. But we'll ride this.
Yeah, they're worse than your best... craziest sports team fanatics.
How so?
If you say something bad about their company, they will come after you.
These are people with no interest in the company whatsoever. They just like it.
They love their products. And Apple, that makes sense, right? Apple makes some damn great products.
Yeah.
Okay, but BlackBerry. BlackBerry has the craziest fans. I mean, I'm not even lying right now. Like, I'm going to be doing a BlackBerry review soon, and I'm preparing my fortress to go into after that review posts. I don't know if it'll be positive. I don't know if it'll be negative. I haven't even gotten the product yet.
Yeah.
But no matter what, they will be after me.
If you had to put them in a pit, who are the most passionate, aggressive fans out there?
Well, again, it's very similar to sport. I don't really know anything about sports, but I'm telling you it's very similar to sports.
It's okay, neither do we.
Because when their team is not doing well, they get very angry. right? These
They're
are
like,
the people.
The 5S didn't really catch on. Boy, we're really feeling it. We need a victory, Joanna.
Right. Well, Apple fans right now, they're at their prime.
Right. They're like
they
Patriots fans. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
They don't, they, nothing goes wrong. If I say something bad about Apple, well, whatever, you know? But BlackBerry, Microsoft, the company, Nokia, the companies where they're struggling.
Compaq?
They have zero fans. There is one out there. One out there. I'm sure I've got an email from them. But those fans, they, you know, they've got a lot to lose.
Yeah.
They've got everything to gain, but they've also got a lot to lose because, you know, there's very little left to lose.
You mentioned getting a notification on your Apple Watch. So you're still wearing the Apple Watch.
Been wearing the Apple Watch.
Are you on board? Let's put it this way.
Be careful, BlackBerry fans are listening.
You will wear
their watches.
No, it doesn't necessarily
coming.
Have to be an Apple, but you feel
it's
like
a
this kind
watch.
A personal device is something that you'll.
I wear it for two reasons. To tell the time, it's very good at telling the time.
Yeah,
it does what no watch has ever done before.
Yeah.
In that sense,
yeah.
It gives you the time when you need it.
Yeah.
And there's a calendar on it, too, so it tells you what time it is and also what your next appointment is. That is actually different than most standard watches. So that's bucket number one. Bucket number two is actually fitness and activity tracking.
Yeah.
I really like it for working out. I like being able to keep tabs on how long I've been working out for, calories burned, et cetera.
Yeah.
I think there's a ways to go with that. But for right now, it's the best one that you can really get out there that can combine.
And there are more apps.
Design.
There are an increasing number of apps that are making better use of it.
Right. Yeah. And eventually, you know, I think Apple will open up more of the data that those apps can tap into.
This is a ridiculous question, but how different do you think a product this will be, you know, third, fourth generation down the line?
I mean, I think there's the hardware side of it, that things are just going to have to get drastically better. Battery is the biggest problem, I think, facing Apple
right
now.
You
got to
do it every night.
You got to do it every night,
but
also this is chunky because there's a battery in it,
right?
So batteries need to get smaller. They need to get more efficient. Also, the charging thing that they have is ridiculous. It's constantly falling off all the time. It's actually my dog's favorite thing to chew on, which is they did something great with that product. It's a great dog toy. But, you know, size and the way these actually look.
Yeah.
You only think they can go up. And right now, Apple's making the best-looking device.
My one complaint about the Apple Watch is if I look over at your watch right now, it's idle, right? It doesn't. You can't actually see the time, so I can't steal the time. Since I don't wear a watch, I can't just look over at your watch to steal what time it is without you actually
having Apple Watch
the
button. Sort of like how I write my columns.
The Apple Watch.
I can just look at your screen and steal it.
The Apple Watch has put a crimp in your time stealing.
No, but there's been times I've been on the subway and I'm running late, you know, and I don't want to keep reaching
looking
in my pocket to look for what time it is.
Yeah.
So I look at someone else's watch to know what time it is.
Jim,
you know,
I would put that pretty low down on the list of complaints about the Apple Watch. I want to ask you a question.
I'm going to talk to Apple about that.
How often do you have to review something? Do you sort of self-select in the respect that, like, I care about this or I care about this innovation, I care about this product? How often do you have to spend time with something that you don't care one way or the other about it?
We're pretty lucky to be able to choose what we want to do.
Yeah.
Wilson Rothman's my editor, and we have a lot of fights about what I want to review and he thinks are dumb things to review. And sometimes the best product and product of mine ends up being stuff that he's like, we're not going to review selfie sticks. Or this is the Wall Street Journal. And then I figure out a way to make selfie sticks really interesting, and it's a great product.
Did Wilson's a cool guy. Did he really say?
He did.
We are not going to review selfie sticks. This is the Wall Street Journal. Did he really say that? That's amazing.
He did say we're not going to review selfie sticks. I don't remember the second half of that sentence because I was already fighting him on the first part. So he's coming to New York today. You can tell him. But
you kicked off the revolution because that was a spectacular piece.
It was a good piece. There was another one. I wanted to write a whole article in emojis. That isn't really a product review, but you know, we offered a lot of good guidance in that piece. He told me it was going to be insane. There was no way to write an article in emojis, and we did it. So that's part of the fun of the job, is picking things that I think are interesting, and hopefully other people will read it. And, you know, we have a lot of weeks in the year to write these columns.
How often do you hear this from people? Because I think this a lot when I see your stuff. They're like, wow, you know, this is different than what I imagine a Wall Street Journal tech piece would be like, especially the videos.
Yeah, that there's been a mixed reaction from readers. A lot have really embraced the change of the new guard now.
Because, of course, Walt Mossberg was the, you know, basically the creator of this form of personal technology writing and really the godfather of it. Now, of course, one of the founders of Recode.
Yeah, and Walt is a mentor to me. But when I took the job, I knew I wanted to do something completely different.
Yeah.
And, you know, it actually just started to flow where it became very natural for me to think of some creative way to tell a story and then just kind of head down with it. And Drew has been really instrumental in letting us do that. I mean, you know, he's grown over the last 2 years and so have I.
Yeah.
So many readers love it. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing to see, you know, as soon as that column goes up and they get emails to see the reactions of, I can't wait to see the video. And actually, the video has been really interesting. Last week, I published a column at the last minute. It was the Surface Book, Microsoft Surface Book review. And I had to change the column at the last minute. I said I was going to fully recommend this product. And then 24 hours later, in the middle of this crazy conference, the entire laptop crashed. And I said, you know what? I can't recommend this product fully. So, you know, scurrying to rewrite the column, you know how that goes. And then I'm scurrying to figure out how can we possibly save this really great video that I thought was really good.
Yeah.
And the column went up before the video and people were like, read? You want me to read? Like, even one of our own columnists, Christopher Mims, was like, I don't read your stuff. Just send the video when it's ready.
I have a bone to pick with you about something. You're into rose gold.
I'm into rose gold.
I think it's. I think a year from now we'll be like, remember when we were all into rose gold?
My engagement ring is rose
gold. Oh my God! Wow. Now I. Jim, can you see the egg on my face? Look at it. Look at it. Egg all over my face.
I see that.
Rose gold gadgets might be over, and I don't like the new iPhone in rose gold. I do not think it looks nice.
Okay, listen, that is a beautiful engagement ring. I want you to know that. And by no means was I trying to impugn that incredible choice.
I'm just saying I was into rose gold before everyone else was into rose gold.
You were an early adopter, as they say.
Of rose gold. And you've heard of bros gold, of course.
That's right. That's right. Okay. Now, I want to ask you a serious-ish question, which is that I hear, you know, we write about sports, and one thing that happens in sports, which is remarkable, is the amount of just vitriol that gets directed towards not just sports writers, but people who play sports, teams, and so on. I mean, it's just sort of like the amount of hate parlance that exists in sports is astonishing. But within the tech community, I mean, you alluded to this a little bit, fan people. How are tech companies with regard to the idea of just general critical thought? I mean, we hear so much about tech press maybe being sort of a little too hand in glove with the industry.
Right.
You, of course, don't participate in this kind of thing at all. But what is that relationship like? Can you actually have good productive conversations with tech companies in which, you know, you're saying, look, you know, I'm going to write about this as a normal person and what I like, et cetera?
It's a really good question. It depends on the company.
Yeah.
Certainly, as you would guess, many of the bigger companies are not open to that.
I think of Apple as like Beyonce. They're like, we're Beyonce, and everyone likes us, and whatevs, right?
You know, everyone wants you to love their stuff.
Sure. Last week, out on the West Coast, where was it on the West Coast?
Laguna Beach.
Laguna Beach in the OC.
In the OC.
WSJD, this big fancy pants conference. Jim, did you get your invite?
It must have got lost in
the
mail.
Yeah, mine too. Must have got lost in the mail. But, you know, heavies of the tech industry there, including Tim Cook, who runs Apple, Elizabeth Holmes, who sort of fascinatingly was the subject, her company, is it Theranos or Theranos?
Theranos.
Subject of some very, very interesting journal reporting in the days leading up to it. What's this whole thing like? Are you guys sitting around playing volleyball on the beach? And is there like barbecuing and like, you know, singing and dancing?
Yeah,
and,
I mean, I was just in the green room asking for autographs and everyone was super embarrassed by me.
Don't forget Mark Cuban.
Mark Cuban and I hit it off.
Yeah.
And I didn't ask for his autograph, but I was so close because we really hit it off. I'm a huge Shark Tank fan. And I was like referencing all these companies. Do you guys watch a show?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I was referencing, why didn't you invest in the ice cream company? Why didn't you invest in the nail company? And like, he didn't
You're
even
like,
remember
that Slingshot
half of that.
Barbecue was brilliant.
Yeah. I'm like, did you see the motorcycle that was a bike but was also a pair of feet? Like, it's amazing. And he was like, I don't remember those. I mean, he did, but we really hit it off. That was the highlight of my conference.
Do you think they really use their own money like they make
He does. Yeah. I asked him that. I was like, every week you give away that much money?
Yeah.
He's like, no, yeah, seriously. He did tell me that they get to, I forget what the process is called. They have basically a review process. So actually each of those segments is like 2 hours.
Yeah.
And you can tell from the editing, there's a lot of editing down. And then after that, they get to go and really do their due diligence on the companies. And if they want to make changes or they decide, you know what, they didn't mention this in that little briefing or that 2 hour briefing, we're not investing $500,000 or whatever he invests
in. And it is free advertising for the company already when they're on. So even if they don't get an offer, they've
totally
already done an infomercial.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I just love talking to him.
Our tanning bed bikinis really just went off.
And that was, that was one of the highlights of the conference. There was a startup showcase.
Yeah.
Jeff and I sort of like emceed it, and it was Will.i.am, Rupert Murdoch, Mark Cuban, and Teresa Gao, who's an investor. And it was great.
You and Fowler also
We had the biggest interview of the
played
show.
Played with a robot.
Yeah, that was the biggest interview
okay.
of the
and
show,
Okay, and
what
was the robot's name?
What do you think?
I looked at that thing. I looked
book.
At that thing, okay, and I was like, I see our own demise. Like, right? Like, within 3 years, you're going to show up here, and you're going to be, well, all right, 2 years. You're going to look across, and it's going to be, what's that robot's name?
Pepper.
Pepper is going to be sitting in this chair, and Pepper is going to write a goofy little sports column on Mondays. Okay,
and she's gonna Pepper's going to just be in all these videos.
Exactly, Pepper. That's you're going to get caught here. And they're, I mean,
Pepper's
do they even need
job
multiple?
And Drew's
do
job.
They even need multiple Peppers, or they just need one?
Well, funny enough, we actually had two Peppers there because in case Pepper One failed, Pepper Two steps in.
Pepper does the intro to the podcast.
Yeah,
maybe I'm just going to do a podcast with a robot.
That would be great. I got a robot who introduces the show.
We got
you know,
a thumbs up from the control
thumbs
room.
Up. They want to do it. Okay. Listen.
So, Pepper, let me just quickly about Pepper. Pepper is, I don't know if that type of robot is the future. I mean, it's modeled after a small child boy thingy.
I have one of a real one of those.
You have a small child boy robot?
Yeah, I wish he was more robotic, to be frank.
How old is he?
He's going to be 3.
Yeah, so it's about the same age as Pepper.
Yeah, he's a spider monkey. Basically.
He's a spider monkey?
He's
definitely way cuter than Pepper, I have to say.
I don't know, Pepper was pretty cute.
Yeah, I mean, do you see the way he gave me that hug at the end? It was like, Pepper. Anyway, the robot's supposed to read emotions, and actually it's a big push to cheer up the aging in Japan because the elderly aging population, is that the right politically correct? Old people?
Sure.
Old people,
therapy
grandparents.
Bot.
Yeah, therapy bots, right. Yeah. They don't have enough humans to sort of help with that. And so the idea is the robots will do it for us. Of course, the robots will do everything.
On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the creepiest, is there any sort of thing about that robot or its AI capacity that made you go, whoa?
Reading facial expressions is interesting. But it seems like it's a little bit of a jump, right? I want robots to first understand what I'm saying and then maybe try to interpret my feelings behind it.
Okay.
Interpreting our feelings, like, I don't even want humans to do that.
Yeah, that's true. You know? I don't even want Jim to do that.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, if I go to a psychologist, I'll...
All right.
It'll be between us. You know, I don't know what the robot's going to start telling people about my psychological
state
of affairs.
There could be a hack.
Yeah.
And we know everything.
You know, that robot could be employed by someone who works
it
here. And then they could be coming after us. Are we happy at our jobs?
It could be a double agent robot.
Right.
It could be working for the competition. It could be over there at Times Square talking to the New York Times, telling Joanna's thoughts to them.
True.
Thank you for being here.
It's
we want you here all the time.
I
want
to come back here.
You are a huge star, obviously. But if you're not familiar with Joanna's work, you need to get to it immediately at WSJ.com. Also, in the print edition, old-fashioned Joanna shows up in the paper well.
With my stipple.
Exactly. Just a last question for you. If I stop by your place on Halloween with my kids, what are you handing out for trick-or-treats this year?
I live in Manhattan.
I know, but let's just play along with it. What would you give out? Now, I'm giving you a layup
Free
here.
Apple Watches.
Yeah, exactly. What do you have? Like, is it power adapters? What could, like,
power
you had
adapters
to, you
is had, really good. Yes, I'm giving out lightning cables because, fun fact, I will admit it here, I return everything I review.
Right.
Every single thing
That's right.
we review, we return.
That's right. And you buy if you like it. If you
yeah.
wanted to have it, you
That's
buy
right.
it with your own
That's
cash.
Right. I don't return the lightning cables.
Ooh. And that is the scandal that brought down Joanna Stern.
Fine.
You're listening to The Free For All. It's changing my life. I hope it's changing your life. Jim, what's your prediction for Game 1, Mets?
Let's go Mets. That's my prediction.
All right. Join us next week when we'll have a bevy. I said a bevy of new guests here on the WSJ Digital Network. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost-effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.